I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. There was a time, and not so very long ago, when halftime at the big game sounded like this. But let's be honest, it was also a time when most of us got up off the couch and went to the kitchen. So what, thought the marketing wizards of America, can we do to keep those people in their seats? And this is what they came up with. No disrespect, I don't mean no harm. Don't tip me high. I can't wait. The flash of the breast and all that bump and wiggle have now been run so thoroughly through the media's news grinding machine you'd think it would have gone away by now. But no, it has become a cultural event, a moment around which all those fed up with the state of the media have gathered to see what can and what should be done.
Welcome to the Federal Communications Commission Consumer Center. If you are calling regarding the Super Bowl halftime show, please press 5. The FCC has launched an investigation into broadcast events that occurred during the halftime of Super Bowl 38 to determine whether any violation of the commission rules or policies has occurred. The commission has defined broadcast indecency as language or material.
So, if you were to leave a message for the regulators and the legislators or the entertainment executives, what would that be? Now, some are saying, so what? That parents have been silently sitting through crotch-clutching and cleavage on television for close to 20 years. Others want that Janet Jackson moment to be marked as the place to take a stand, to say this is not what America wants on prime time, and to use the big heavy hammer of government regulation to make that point, if that's what it takes. Perhaps at the end of all this huffing and puffing, we'll find ourselves debating not the breast on TV, but the FCC itself, and how the public airwaves ought to be managed. We want to hear from you. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to start today with Congressman Fred Upton. He is chair of the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Telecommunications and the Internet. He's a Republican congressman from Michigan, and he's the point person behind a plan to jack up the penalties for stuff on television that is indecent, profane, or obscene. Congressman Upton, thanks for being with us.
Hey, you can still call me Fred.
I will.
Good
do
morning.
That. Fred, were you watching the game?
I did watch the game. I missed the halftime event, I confess. Obviously, I, like just about everybody else, have seen the replays, though they've been censored, and I heard quite about it a little bit later that evening as well. But actually, the work that we've started, or that you referenced here in terms of why I'm on this morning, began before the Super Bowl event on Sunday. In fact, we had a hearing the previous week. Michael Powell, the chairman of the FCC, lamented in a speech before the National Press Club that the fines were too low. In fact, the fines were established back in 1934, 70 years ago. And we had a hearing the week before, and we focused on particularly on repeat offenders and that type of thing, but the fines have been they're too small. And it's almost, as he said, the cost of doing business. And we looked at a number of different events, whether they be in Chicago, Detroit, Washington, Los Angeles, where it was more than just using the F word on a broadcast. It, in fact, was pages and pages of transcripts describing, the worst sexual activity between dads and their kids and girls. And it's not meant for the public airwaves.
So Fred, how do you mark then the Super Bowl? I mean, if you didn't, did anybody in your family see it? Was there any family discussion about it?
Actually, I asked my 12-year-old son. He was at a neighbor's. He did not see it. My wife was studying. She's a seminary student. And my daughter was studying as well. So none of the four of us saw it live. We've all seen it videotaped.
Tell me if you think it is something of a moment there. I mean, here
I
we are.
I think that they did cross the line. I do. This you know, and I've seen MTV, and obviously I'm a cable subscriber, so I get MTV, like I presume 100% of cable subscribers. It seems like it's everywhere. But this, and I've talked to the head of the networks, all of them. I've talked to the commissioner of the NFL. And this, clearly was not supposed to happen this way. And, on MTV, you're going to expect something close to what we saw, perhaps. The dancing, the lyrics of the song, I want to get naked by the end of the song is what the lyrics actually were. no one, I don't think, anticipated the Janet Jackson's move as she did it. But, you know, this is over the public airwaves. This is, you know, 8, 9, my son's 12.
Right.
We're all watching neighborhood events, and clearly I think violates the standards that are supposed to be in place. And the FCC, as we know, is investigating the situation, and I suspect that they'll come up with a verdict, and if guilty, they'll face a fine.
So what? See, I have trouble with this. Where's the line? I mean, your son watching the game would have also seen a woman's hair being burned by a farting horse and a small dog biting someone else in the crotch, so he dropped his drink. And I mean, the commercials were pretty well close to potty humor right on through. And certainly the idea of seeing a lot of cleavage and a lot of bounce and jiggle the halftime of a football game isn't something new.
What do you do when you have, as our hearing focused on the week before,
right,
about cheerleaders talking about the different football players that they've done, and the exact events that they do, and they're asking for people to call in, and
yeah,
and that goes on as the transcripts show, page after page after page, and they get fined, and then they do it again and again and again, knowing that these fines are again set back in 1934. I mean, what our bill does, our piece of legislation that I introduced back in January does, it increases the fine tenfold. The law is on the books already. The
yeah.
FCC has the right to go after these folks when community standards are broached. And
you'll know as I do that a lot of people are pretty cynical about the FCC right now. I mean, we had Bono on the Golden Globes using the F word, and the FCC said, if I've got my notes right here, that might have been crude or offensive, but it was fleeting and isolated. So the F word on a broadcast like that is okay.
So I think they're going to change their view. My sense is that they will reverse that decision probably by next week. We'll see, but I think that they will.
Tell me, are there a lot of Congress representatives who've been in touch with you saying, you know, Fred, I'm with you on this?
There have been. And I want to say more than that, we've actually gotten, and remember, we're not getting mail delivery right now because of this ricin thing over on the other side in the Senate. We have gotten thousands, plural, of emails in support of what we're doing. The legislation that I introduced, it's not at all a partisan effort. Every subcommittee chairman is a co-sponsor. But I've got the leading – I'm a Republican, as you indicated. We've got the leading Democrats on the committee, Ed Markey, who's my ranking member. He'd be chairman if the Democrats were in charge.
We know him well.
Yeah, I do. And John Dingell is a co-sponsor as well. We have more than 100 co-sponsors after just introducing it literally 2 weeks ago.
Can I ask you about the math, though? Because the fine that you mentioned, $27,500 for indecency, you hope to put that up to $275,000 for a violation. But if we were to take a look at the Janet Jackson event, would that be every affiliate station would have to pay that fine?
Well, that's one of the issues that we're going to talk about at our hearing next week. In fact, we have an affiliate we have three panels that are scheduled to testify at our hearing on Wednesday next week. We're going to have an affiliate broadcaster come and testify.
Mm-hmm.
They've been
hearing about this too.
they have. And I must tell you that it, particularly as you look at it from the affiliate's position, again, they have not submitted their testimony yet, my understanding will be that they will probably say, look, we are, you know, whether they be NBC, CBS, Fox, whatever, we are there. We have to take the programming. We don't know what's going to be coming down the pike. We, unlike the Viacom or NFL, we've not seen the halftime dress rehearsals. We have no clue what's going on, and we have to take it. And if we don't, we lose our affiliation. How are we responsible if someone uses the F word or does something like that? We shouldn't be subject to that. And I think they have a very good point.
Okay, which would mean that you should put the fine up to $27 million because, I mean, CBS is pocketing $2.3 million for a 30-second ad on the Super Bowl. If you're going to say, well, if you do that again, we're going to fine you $275,000, they'll say, hey, look at the publicity it generated. We'll take the fine. We'll do it again.
There's some other things that the FCC still has the power to do, though they've not done this. They have the power of revocation of the license, and that's why the FCC is involved. They have the occasion, if it's language, to actually do it per word or per sentence, whatever they might want to establish. And in fact, in some of the rulings that they have levied, some of the fines that they have levied, the commissioners, Republican and Democrat, by the way, remember this, the FCC five commissioners are a bipartisan commission. They have indicated that they would like to, in fact, increase the fine per occasion or per word, and the possibility, perhaps, of looking at license revocation, which, of course, that's the death penalty to broadcasters.
Is this a real turning point for the FCC, in your view? I mean, obviously, there's all this public attention on it, and that's a good thing, you know, when people are talking about it. But this whole notion that those airwaves, in fact, are a public trust and not something that, you know, private executives get to decide completely on what they get to do without any anyone watching over them. Can you imagine a time, a few months from now, where the FCC is suddenly a creature with teeth to be feared again?
Yeah, I think that they will be. And I think, and we've invited, by the way, as part of our panel that afternoon, next Wednesday, all five commissioners to come and testify. And again, we've got, you know, I expect to have many Republicans and many Democrats on my subcommittee on the dais with lots of questions and looking for a lot of dialogue between the different parties that we have come and testify before us.
So your ideal wish then for the conclusion of all this, obviously, is to get the legislation that you're proposing passed.
And we're hoping to get it passed. We actually, inside the Beltway here, we say marked up, but in essence that's approved. We're hoping to mark it up in subcommittee as early as Thursday, the day after the hearing. Now, we may not have votes that day, so that may be a problem. But I've been assured that our bill will be on a fast track, and we're hoping to get it through my subcommittee as quick as we can, the full committee, and get it to the House floor. And the administration has come out in support of our bill. Again, it's bipartisan, and I'd like to think that we have a pretty good opportunity of getting it to the president's desk before the end of next month.
Congressman, thanks for being with us.
You bet.
Congressman Fred Upton's chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee for Telecommunications and the Internet. Those are the people who oversee the FCC. I want to bring in Robert Thompson just for a brief comment because we have to go to a break. Robert is founding director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University. And Robert, just on the congressman's last point, maybe the FCC with teeth. Can you imagine a time?
Well, what I'd like to see, if the FCC does in fact get more teeth, I'd like it to see it not only take a bite out of content, but I'd also see it like to get more teeth. What brought this all about in the first place, let's remember, is that we've had decades of deregulation with regards to ownership, another very important element that the FCC deals with. It's interesting how the same people who want to put the teeth back in the FCC with regards to content, and in fact give it more teeth than it ever had, most of them are not saying a single word about the FCC's teeth with regards to ownership, where there used to be a whole set of rules which have been systematically deregulated over the past several decades.
Alan Goodman, writing here in the Boston Globe, asked the question, what's a greater threat to the democracy of the nation, the deregulation and the ownership pyramids, or questions of Janet Jackson's upper body? And we'll pick that up with your calls when we come back. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Should the public airwaves be more regulated than they are now? Are there other issues that also need to be addressed here? What are you making of the flap over the boob? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Who'd have thought that Thursday after a Sunday Super Bowl, people would still be talking about Janet Jackson's anatomy and what it's going to mean for regulation in the country. But the conversation continues. Robert Thompson is with me this hour. He's founding director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University and author of a book called Television's Second Golden Age. Robert, were you watching the Super Bowl on the weekend?
I was watching it with a clipboard in hand, taking notes on the commercial. I was stone cold sober, and I've got to say I must have glanced down at my plate of nachos because I didn't even miss the big 2 seconds of the breast exposure. I saw the fireworks thereafter, and since nobody remarked upon it in the broadcast, nobody in the room I was watching with, which had a bunch of kids and adults and the rest of it, even saw it. I think to a great extent in the coverage of this afterwards, we created a much bigger monster than the one being tried to vanquish. As the last guest pointed out, nobody in his family saw it till the next day when they all saw it.
And they all went to the internet and downloaded pictures.
And got to see close-ups. And I now know what that piece of jewelry called a nipple shield is. This was information I otherwise was not privy to.
All right. What?
I have to say, I have never talked more about the female breast since I was in seventh grade in the boys' locker room.
Is this television's second golden age? Is this a good thing that this conversation is, in fact, continuing?
Well, of course it is. I mean, it is strange that Janet Jackson, in a 2 second from a long camera angle exposure of her breast, has in fact upstaged the Super Bowl, the Patriots, the commercials, the primary elections, and Iraq, for that matter, for about 4 days. That's probably a little bit messed up priority-wise.
Yeah.
But I think what happened was that, you know, the gasoline was already spread all over the field. What Janet Jackson did just lit the match. And these conversations not only should be being had now, I think culture has to have them constantly. It's just that it's filled with these bizarre paradoxes and the hyperbole of the shock that the NFL has that sex dare rear its head in the Super Bowl. I mean, some of it would be laughable if it weren't so important. But yes, the short answer to the question is this is a conversation that should be ongoing.
Mary Jo Kane is director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. She also teaches at the Center for Advanced Feminist Studies at that university. She's joining us on the line from her home in Minneapolis. Mary Jo, nice of you to be with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm going to start where I started with everyone else, or as best I could, and that is, were you watching the game on Sunday?
I actually wasn't because I was driving back from Madison, Wisconsin, after having gone to a women's basketball game. But I, like everyone else, have now seen it ad nauseum. And I find it sort of the height of irony that all of these news organizations are expressing shock about offending the sensibilities of their viewers while they have the moment in an endless replay loop. Actually, my reaction to the reaction of the so-called, you know, sort of breastgate is I feel a bit like Claude Rains in Casablanca saying, I'm shocked that women as sexual entertainment for men broke out at the Super Bowl.
Is it, in your view, something that needs to be talked about from a point of view of what goes on in football as much as what goes on in television? Because, I mean, more of the conversation, I think you'll probably agree up until this point, has been, I can't believe it was on television. It was primetime and my kids were watching it, rather than its connection to sport.
Well, I do think a piece of it is sport, but I do think that what I find really interesting is that I think this whole issue now has been framed as a moral decency issue rather than looking at this as just sort of the epitome of the sexualization of women and sex as male entertainment, which is all about what male sports, especially sports like football, is about. And quite frankly, this fiction that the NFL and the Super Bowl has been packaged for the last decade as family entertainment is ludicrous. I mean, I want to say to all these people who say, well, you know, we know what we get when we turn on MTV, but, you know, when we watch the Super Bowl, we expect family entertainment. Maybe they don't know that the Super Bowl is about the NFL, and maybe they've never gone to an Oakland Raiders game, for example. I mean, this is just part of what men's sports is about, where women are quite literally and figuratively consigned to the sidelines as sex objects.
Robert, the idea that it's always been a part of football. I mean, Mary Jo's dead on here.
Oh, she absolutely is. I get such a kick out of the chairman of the FCC and the NFL are now packaging the Super Bowl as though it was this Norman Rockwell-esque moment that, you know, just after dad reads 'Twas the Night Before Christmas to the kids, they all snuggle up and watch the Super Bowl. Going back decades, these commercials have been sexualizing the consumption of alcohol, trotting out women in various stages of undress. Twins seems to be a favorite. This is the Super Bowl we're talking about, not Thanksgiving dinner. But there's another point that comes out of this, which is interesting, that this has been packaged as an indecency, a moral indecency situation, which I think, again, given 2 seconds from a far camera angle, is something of a stretch. Yet there is another way that we might want to be actually concerned about this, and that was exactly actually what happened in those 2 seconds. I'm less concerned of the exposure of that breast as the way in which it was exposed. This guy, in fact, literally yanks it from her, and then she acts as though she is kind of surprised and awed and all of the rest of it. I don't know that we want to use the R word, but it's certainly simmering in back of what that whole choreography was all about, which means this begins to make strange bedfellows. On one sense, you don't want to agree with the hyperbole and hypocrisy that's going on with this response. On the other hand, there was something about that performance beyond the breast, which is really kind of disturbing.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill's joining us now. Bill.
Good morning.
Thanks
for
calling.
Do me a favor and leave me on long enough for me to make all my points.
Well, I'll try my best.
Okay. You let that congressman off the air way too soon. You started the program by asking what would you say to the FCC and the congressman and everyone else that was outraged about the Super Bowl incident, and my answer would be get a life. I mean, on that particular Super Bowl Sunday, they had a dog biting someone's crotch until the guy whose crotch was bitten gave back a beer to the dog's owner. They had a horse fart, and I guess it caught fire and singed a woman.
Yeah,
I mean, NYPD Blue, for example, shows Dennis France's butt, and if that isn't scary, I don't know what is. I mean, one of your guests pointed out that by far a more serious point with the FCC is the decreasing number of people owning the majority of the news outlets in the United States. That outrages me. This silliness is unbelievable. I can't believe we're tying up an hour's worth of time, let alone FCC time, on something as ridiculous as this.
Let me ask...
Are you going to go back to the Statue of Justice and cover up her breasts again?
Well, I'll have to ask the secretary about that. But Bill, I guess what I'm not hearing from you is whether or not you think that everything that's on television is fine and we shouldn't be worried about that. We should be talking about ownership, or that if this flap, whatever it is, gets us talking about farting horses as well as, you know, singers pulling at the shirts of other singers, maybe that's not a bad thing.
Okay, bottom line, everything on television is not fine. You're talking about somebody who hasn't owned a TV since 1994, by the way. I have gone on to getting a life. But having said that, everything on TV is not fine. But I am also a firm believer in the First Amendment, freedom of expression. The freedom of expression is for the people who have courage. It's not for the wimps. It's not for the cowardly. It's not for the timid. There's always going to be people that are going to be crossing the line. The whole point is, yes, you want to talk about it, talk about it. You want to be outraged, you want to be outraged. Beyond that, I would not impose fines. I would not say this can be done, this can't be done, et cetera, et cetera. If public outrage is all that great, eventually producers are going to get the point and are going to cut back on it.
Let me stop you here because I want to turn back to Mary Jo Kane on this question of whether or not, you know, the conversation, whatever it is likely to lead anywhere, because people aren't really talking about defining, you know, what's offensive on television as much as they're just saying, well, that bugged me. And I mean, do you see this leading anywhere, Mary Jo?
Well, no, ultimately I don't. Let me just say a couple of things that's related to that question. I mean, I do think on the one hand, I do understand Bill's point about get a life. What is the big deal? And why is it that this particular breast has been infused with so much cultural meaning?
Mm-hmm.
Because if, for example, the family values, Norman Rockwell family was watching that halftime show, way before we got to Janet Jackson's breast, and I thought by the way, Professor Thompson's point about the fact that he didn't just remove it daintily, he ripped it off in terms of the collapsing of sex and violence towards women. But they could have certainly turned it much before that in terms of the grabbing, Nellie grabbing his crotch every second, the bump and the grind. So I think it's really interesting that it is a woman's breast that has really taken on such important significance. But here's why I do think it's significant if it does go anywhere. I think Janet Jackson's breast now has come to represent, as you pointed out, Mr. Gordon, in the beginning, a cultural event. But I think that this is about the culture wars. I really, really think that that's much of what's going on here, as well as the increasing lack of public access to the public airwaves, sport, sex, violence as entertainment, and quite frankly, with all due respect, the media plays a very large role here. I mean, I was saying to a friend that how long do you think it took Janet Jackson behind the stage to figure out what would get her a lot of free publicity moving into the Grammy Awards and the release of her new CD? Because the media's role here is, frankly, you're like Pavlov's dogs. You make an event much bigger than it actually was. So I do hope it goes somewhere, but I hope it's framed in terms of the sexualization of women and violence against women as entertainment for males, especially as an absolutely institutionalized part of male sport.
Well, you listen
and that's a really big piece that we're missing here.
You listened to the congressman at the beginning of the program. Did you hear any of that in what he's hoping to do with the FCC?
No, although I have to say, and I think this is why sort of feminists and cultural religious conservatives sometimes end up making sort of strange bedfellows, because I found myself sort of agreeing with a lot of what he said, in the sense that I want to have a larger discourse about what it means to have the sexualization and violence as sex against women as part of male sport and male entertainment. I don't hear him saying that, and yet I do believe that's part of the broader issue.
And Robert, if I can come back to you on this one, Michael Powell is quoted as saying, as having said in the past, "I don't want the government as my nanny. I still have never understood why something as simple as turning it, the television, off is not a part of the answer." Now, he seems to have done a complete about-face in response to this. Where's it going to go?
Well, he's certainly changed his tune, and of course he's presided over a lot of ownership deregulation and all of the rest of it. But I think he's hearing this loud and organized voice against this kind of thing, and I don't think it's going to be packaged in looking at this in the ways that we maybe should be concerned about it, the sexualization of women and all the rest. For example, ER now, there's this big flap that ER has a quick flash of a scene with an 80-year-old woman on a gurney, and her breast is going to show. And now this is the big, this is the big question, is whether we take this off or not. We focus on these little kind of quantifiable things, and we totally miss the larger sorts of issues. And then again, if it actually came to the point where people wanted to start making lists of what you could and couldn't do, you know, once you say teen suicide, can't do it, Romeo and Juliet goes out the window. Even something like fathers and daughters having sex, as the congressman pointed out, there have been some actually pretty responsible TV movies about that, which would go out the window as well. In many ways, if you're going to let people do what they can do in this great medium, you've got to take the toxic waste if you get the good stuff, just like the First Amendment allows Nazi marchers in Skokie. Very few people think that's a good thing. Most people are outraged about it, but they feel it's a price one pays for the American experiment.
1-800-423-8255. Rineyville, Kentucky now. Rita's joining us. Rita, thanks for calling.
Hello. I'll begin by saying our family was watching the game. I did not see it. I was talking and eating chips, that sort of thing. But my son's fiance was like, "Did you see that?" And we just kind of like, she really couldn't have seen that. But, of course, we know she did. But I think that maybe parents all over the country will start to look at MTV a little bit differently, or at least look at it. I think Mary Jo is such a good speaker. I'm glad you have her on here. When we got basic cable, like 15 years ago, I had to pay to have MTV blocked. So I'd like people to know you can do that, because it's horrible for young girls to watch MTV, or boys, either one. So,
do you feel as a mom that you can actually design what it is that your kids have access to? I was talking to a friend of mine who's got young girls, and he has them on this computer package, which very carefully screens out their access to anything that he doesn't want them seeing on the net. And he was describing it to me. It was interesting. I hadn't heard anything about that. I know that it happens on television. But are you confident, Rita, that as an engaged mom, you can do that work yourself?
I think that we should. I think that certainly my daughter's in medical school now, and we didn't have any of those magazines that talked about how to wear your makeup, how to please your man. Why does a 14-year-old girl need that sort of content coming in their home in the form of magazines or television?
Okay, now, Rita, would you like to have the FCC also standing behind you with its big hammer held over the head of CBS or whoever, saying, right, certain bits or parts of programming ought not to have whatever kind of content people choose not to have in there? I mean, do you want the FCC to be a lot stricter here?
I think so. I think somebody needs to. And yes, at the home, that should be where we start to do that. But a lot, to use your terminology, it's not just the flap of the boob. I mean, it makes us look at, I'm hoping it makes people look at MTV and that whole culture and say, oh, is this what my children have been watching? Because I'm sure there are a lot of people that could care less, and that will continue. So I suppose that's why I think, yes, the FCC needs some teeth.
Rita, thanks.
With regard to this.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Robert, how far could the FCC go here? Just sort of imagine the congressman getting everything that he wants in terms of how either the FCC could frighten the networks or redesign the difference between basic and cable and all that sort of thing. How far could this go?
Well, I think the marketplace forces will ultimately overcome the forces of the complaints, and it probably wouldn't go very far. And it would be hard to do. We have to remember that the reason television was so staid for as long as it was, really up no swearing until All in the Family in 1971, and not very much content that got much worse than that until cable kicked in. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much the FCC. They didn't have prior restraint. They didn't say what you could and couldn't do. They waited till they got a complaint, and then they decided to accordingly. It was the self-censorship, the broadcast standards and practice departments within the networks that had a series of rules that said you couldn't say pregnant, so they didn't on I Love Lucy and the rest of it. When cable kicked in with all of this competition, they no longer were able to play by those rules, so they quit enforcing themselves. So we don't know what if the FCC actually comes up with lists of words you cannot say or lists of things you cannot do, that's going to be going into uncharted territory.
Uncharted territory. Connection listeners, are you ready for that? Do you want the putty put back into Barbara Eden's navel? 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking this hour about regulation and what we know is going to be a big congressional tsunami in favor of tightening up. Are you ready for that? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour we're talking about the continuing conversation over Janet Jackson, who has been informed by the powers at CBS that she's such a high-risk character, she's not even going to be allowed on the Grammys show. That's the spin on the story as it continues on through this week, beginning at the Super Bowl. But we'd like to actually kind of go back to that and take a look at it from a point of view of where is this heading, particularly when we see the congressional move to give some new teeth to the FCC over this. 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program, Robert Thompson, founding director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University, author of a book called Television's Second Golden Age. Mary Jo Cain's also with us on the phone. She's director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. She's also a teacher at the Center for Advanced Feminist Studies at that university. Mary Jo, when you think about what might be on the Super Bowl instead of the sort of thing that we did watch, I mean, nobody really wants to go back to Sousa, because nobody's going to sit there and watch that. The reality is, as was pointed out by a colleague here, that the halftime show the Super Bowl, is one of the most lucrative, high money, greatest marketing opportunities that exists in television. So could you do anything with that that would correct some of the sexualizing that you're talking about and still have people sitting and watching it?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree, or I don't necessarily agree with you when you say we can't go back to Sousa. I mean, why couldn't we have kind of a more traditional halftime entertainment show that does show spectacular bands, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Or here's an idea, showcasing what great athletes women are and have become over the last 30 years. But that's not going to happen because, again, the role of women in a sport like football, which is one of the last bastions of male hyper-heterosexuality, is just not going to happen. And the reason why I said to you earlier that I don't think this issue, especially with the FCC, will go very far is what you were just talking about a second ago, which is the Grammy Awards. This Breastgate, if you will, has become a cultural event. It's become the big story on the media. And I think you'll have this anticipation up to the Grammy Awards that just happens to be on, here's a big coincidence, CBS. And so there'll be all this sort of anticipation and build up and what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen is Justin Timberlake, who's now positioned himself as the victim and as the dupe of Janet Jackson. Once the Grammy Awards play out, unless there's something outrageous at the Grammy Awards to keep the story going, it will simply no longer be a story. Something else will come along and take it up as the big story, and then we'll just go on to something else.
Well, Robert, that's a natural for you, because isn't that what television has largely become, the opportunity to figure out what the next big way to get noticed is? If it's not a couple of female singers kissing at an awards thing or somebody flashing a bit of skin at something else, I mean, you got to think that these people, the executives and the entertainers, are figuring out, wow, we don't want to be tame, or we don't want to be seen as not being daring or exciting or drawing viewers.
Right. Well, that's true. And I think certainly Janet Jackson had motive here because she wanted to seem, she wanted to add some voltage and some juice to launching this new career. CBS, on the other hand, I can't imagine that they were trying to do this for publicity, because I don't buy that all publicity is good publicity. Some publicity is really bad. Mm-hmm. And CBS had to have known that if this happened, especially if they planned it, that what it was going to do would be to upstage their entire broadcast, and they were going to have nothing but people crawling down their back. So I don't think in some cases publicity for publicity's sake is not good for a network, though it can be very good for an artist. I think it's true. This will be, as we found out with Trials of the Century, they're coming on around about every 6 months now. We've got four of them happening right now. This thing itself will go away. However, I think the larger set of questions that are central to the culture wars in general are going to continue to be fought, and a lot of people on both sides of the political spectrum are beginning to seem comfortable with a level of content regulation that we've never had before, and that does disturb me. Not that I defend, there's a lot of garbage on television,
yeah,
but you begin to regulate against that garbage, and a lot of other stuff has to go away as well.
1-800-423-8255 to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Richard's joining us. Richard, thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. How y'all doing today?
Fine.
I hope I don't offend anybody, but I think this has really been blown a little too far out of proportion. The FCC says that they want to, they want to take care of this matter. They want to address this matter. They regulate, impose fines on who needs to be imposed on. And I was listening to a radio show the other day. And,
you listen to a show other than mine, Richard?
Oh, come on now. 12 hours is a long time.
It's true.
And the person that they were talking to from the FCC made the statement that they're doing it for the protection of the children. Now, that popped into my head immediately. Okay, say your child was sitting in the living room watching the Super Bowl game, and then the child was exposed to Janet Jackson's, breast. What is the difference between that and a child on a playground, or the child out playing in the front yard, and somebody comes driving down the road with the windows down, music blaring, and the child is exposed to all kinds of a variety of cuss words normally, you know, put out in hip-hop type music.
So
is, the child's exposed.
I get you completely, Richard. So what do? Do you just sort of say, it's what we live with now and keep on going? Or is there a point at which you stop and say, okay, if I'm not too happy with what's on television and particularly not happy with what's coming out of somebody else's car radio, what do we do as citizens?
Well, either we're going to have to start, you know, kind of banding together and voice our opinion and get the whole thing cleared up, you know, get everything stopped, or we just let it go and just hope everything comes out for the better.
And which side do you come down on?
Well, really, I don't like to hear it. I don't like to hear it. I don't allow my children to listen to that type of music. I have a young 5-year-old who is in a daycare center, and we found out one of the employees in the daycare center was playing this type of music on a little small portable boombox. The child was coming home and repeating this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we addressed it very quickly, and it did come to a stop. But I don't really think that this is going to be a situation that is going to be resolved quickly. I think this is going to be something that is going to carry on for a pretty good long time, because a lot of people, they're just going to stress, you know, freedom of speech. And I think that's going to be their backstop, and that's why this is just going to keep carrying on like it will.
Richard, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Could I jump in there just with a reaction to that? This is Mary Jo.
Go ahead.
Well, this is why I keep going back to this issue of how are we ultimately going to frame this debate. If it's going to be part of a culture war from the perspective of religious cultural conservatives who see this issue as about moral decency, then my concern is that this whole issue will be framed around a 1950s image or definition of what is decent sex and sexuality, meaning between two heterosexuals in a nuclear family, and that everything outside of that box, if you will, is considered indecent or immoral. That is a very different way to frame this issue than to think about women's bodies being sexualized and consumed for male pleasure, and that sport is a significant cultural site where that takes place.
But you've made the point earlier with me, Mary Jo, that there's the cultural event aspect to this is key. So where do you fit Richard's concern in here? Because he's not saying that he wants to go back necessarily to the 1950s, but he's a dad with a young kid, and he's seeing what his kid's exposed to on radio and television and saying, okay, I'm ready to stand up and join something here. What do I join?
Well, and again, this is why this makes me very nervous, because now we get into issues. Excuse me, I'm having a problem with my phone. We get into issues of censorship. And we get into a situation where cultural conservatives are the ones who then start to drive the definition of what is decent and indecent. And I'm not willing to turn that definition over to them, ever.
1-800-423-8255 to Marlborough, Massachusetts. And Gabriel's on the line. Gabriel, thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. Quick point. I'm from Canada. I live in the U.S. And growing up in Canada, you often it was a regular kind of thing to see possibly some form of nudity on television. It wasn't really a big deal. What I'm shocked about in terms of the reaction here is, other than your program, I've heard so little about the violent nature of the incident and how the American public just seems to really be okay with the continual, like, force feeding of violence, and particularly violence against women, and that doesn't even seem to be of import to the SEC. I'm not really concerned with individual occurrences of words, but what about the prevalence of extreme violence on mainstream television during the family hour, and how that's accepted? So I would really agree with the two panelists you have on today, and really I'm concerned that's okay here.
It's a great question, I think, Gabriel. And Robert, maybe you could just weigh in on this, why it is so much one thing and so little of the other.
Well, what I think it boils down to is you can make a list of bad words. it's really hard to make a list of bad activity because there are contexts in which those could actually be okay. I mean, there are stories with violence. King Lear has got a lot of violence in it. I don't think anybody's talking about taking that off the air. I think we are so obsessed with things like certain body parts. I mean, I don't know how many years we discussed whether a nipple or a belly button or whatever could be shown. I guess it's because it's quantifiable. And, you know, in the end, all of this makes the assumption that it's because people don't want to see this because somehow we will become it. We are what we watch. And in the end, maybe if they do get to go back to the 50s with Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, and all the rest of it, look at the generation that grew up with no marital sex on television, People in Separate Beds, Father Knows Best, all of these kinds of shows. They did not become what those shows were. In fact, in many ways, they started a ball rolling that was the complete opposite direction culturally.
And Mary Jo, I'm looking back at the definitions that the FCC has to work with here. The definitions are obscenity and indecency and profanity, and it's kind of hard to figure out what fits, you know, what in the Janet Jackson incident fits into that. I mean, that's maybe the definitions that they're working with. Maybe, you know, sort of tasteless use of nudity or something ought to be something that they can also raise a finger over.
Well, yeah, but again, we're talking about issues of censorship. We're talking about issues of who gets to decide what those definitions are. And so it's this constant balancing act. It's a juggling between, on the one hand, not closing off public discourse, not respecting a wide variety of points of view, but at the same time, at some point, saying enough is enough.
So better to have the networks trying to divine what it is the public want rather than do it through a regulation?
Well, that would be my preference. And I also am, you know, pretty strong on economic forces, although those who say that they believe in a free market economy, of course, do everything they can to gobble up as much of that market as they can. But I, you know, maybe it's because I grew up in the Midwest as a Catholic in the 50s and 60s, even though I'm a feminist, I do think that there is something to be said for public shaming. And if CBS and the NFL can be publicly shamed around, but again, the sexualization and violence towards women in sport, within a sporting context, that's the shaming that I want going on. But that's just simply not going
to
happen.
Robert Thompson, quickly to you. Are we going to hear more about this from the political candidates in the months ahead?
Well, that's a good question. I would guarantee we're going to hear more about this in the months ahead. I'm not sure if the political candidates are going to mention it. Howard Dean did, and I haven't heard a peep from anybody else since. Those definitions you gave, yes, they're vague. I think it's important that they remain vague. When those start becoming focused, then's when we really have to start worrying.
All right. Thanks, both of you, for being with me on the program today. Appreciated hearing your points of view. Robert Thompson, director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University, and Mary Jo Kane, director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. Earlier in the hour, we heard from the Republican Congressman, Fred Upton. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Come on.